From Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. Every state in the U.S. is now in some stage of reopening. In California, most counties are somewhere in phase two of the four different phases. And in Sacramento this weekend, it's expected that you will be able to dine in a restaurant if you choose. We'll get to that in a bit. But Johns Hopkins data shows at least 17 states still with an upward trend of positive COVID-19 cases. That's according to a CNN analysis. California still has a jagged climbing trend in positives, though testing is increasing. And in the last 24 hours in California, 132 more people lost their lives to this disease. My first guest is Dr. Nicholas Sawyer. He's an emergency room doctor with UC Davis Health, and he volunteered to help in New York after seeing how hard the disease was hitting from back in March on through into April. He came back to Sacramento just 10 days ago. Dr. Sawyer is joining us by phone. Welcome to Insight. Thanks for your time today.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Where were you needed in New York when you got there? Will you tell me about your assignment?
Yeah, the New York Health and Hospital System put out a request for physician volunteers to come and help. And so a colleague and I signed up online, and we went to Elmhurst, and we were working in a 40-bed ICU of all coronavirus patients who were all on ventilators.
So you'd come from California, Dr. Sawyer, where some of the first cases were presenting at the UC Davis Medical Center in Sacramento. But what did you walk into in Elmhurst in more detail? Just the numbers you just said are astonishing, but tell me more about the situation.
Yeah, so the whole situation was astonishing. The Elmhurst had essentially been hit so hard in the prior 3 weeks that the entire hospital had turned into an ICU. Whereas they previously had about 20 ICU beds, they had at peak about 140 ICU beds in their hospital. And most of the patients were on ventilators. The place where I was working was, again, a 40-bed ICU. All the patients had coronavirus and had been intubated. And during that time, we were caring for, my team had about 10 patients, but we were also responding to emergencies with the other patients on that unit as well.
In the advanced stages of this disease, which you were seeing, what aspect surprised you the most?
The biggest surprise to me was how severely ill these patients were. In coming from California, we had fortunately, due to the shelter in place order, had not seen many critically ill patients. The numbers were low, and we're fortunate for that. We're seeing some numbers in Los Angeles that are higher now. But walking in there, I was surprised by how truly devastating coronavirus can be in the about 5% of the population who become critically ill with the virus. These patients are, this is a brand new virus. We have not seen really anything like it before. And I was working with a colleague who actually was practicing in the 80s during the AIDS epidemic. And I asked him, is this like that? You know, given the unknown pathophysiology, the underlying way that the virus affects the human body. And he said, it is like that, except for it's worse in so far that the patients are dying much quicker. The biggest thing that shocked me was the clotting. This virus somehow, and we're gaining an understanding, but we don't completely understand it. But we're seeing clots throughout the body in these patients, in the lungs. Patients are clotting, leading to rapid progression to requiring hemodialysis. Patients will come in with normal kidney function and then end up requiring hemodialysis within 2 days. We also see clotting in the limbs, which leads to necrosis of the tissue and can lead to limb loss. And the other thing is the strokes that we are seeing in otherwise healthy patients. It's a very strange disease, and we still have a lot to learn about it, and it's a very devastating virus.
So in cases in California that have progressed to that severity or to death, has it been the same circumstances that clotting is among some of these horrific symptoms, horrific aspects of the diseases at the finish line, I guess, of it?
Yes. This is something that's seen across coronavirus patients. And it's clotting is one of the major factors. But as we're learning more about the virus, we're starting to learn not only are that there are asymptomatic carriers, but different people are presenting to their doctors into the emergency department with varying types of symptoms. It could be anything from gastrointestinal symptoms like diarrhea to mild cold symptoms to flu symptoms to, you know, feeling like they can't breathe to, you know, very ill people who come in very, very, very sick. But ultimately, one of the major things that we're seeing is this clotting, and it's very hard to control.
So what treatments were available for patients in New York, and did anything seem to help or to work?
So while I was there, the majority of our patients received hydroxychloroquine, azithromycin. They received sarilumab, which is a type of medicine that aims to control the body's inflammatory response to the coronavirus, as well as convalescent plasma. And the majority of the patients that I cared for got those. At the time, remdesivir was not available to our patient population, but even in the setting of getting those three previous treatments that I had mentioned, it did not appear to make a difference because the vast majority of the patients in my unit who were critically ill with coronavirus died.
How did you manage that? I've wondered this about healthcare workers in New York, how you manage so many people dying under your care every day.
The thing I'd say is I was there for 2 weeks, and you know, my heart really goes out to the frontline workers in New York. You know, they really are real heroes, especially for the ones who were there during the mass influx of these critically ill patients in the weeks just prior to my arrival. For the time that I was there, it's just a part of what we do is we care for patients as compassionately as we can. We do our absolute best. We work as hard as we can to ensure that we can have the best outcomes. But in this setting, there does not appear to be yet an effective treatment for the coronavirus. So what we were finding is that all of the things that we do for critically ill patients don't seem to have an effect to help improve the majority of the patients who become critically ill. So, you know, just knowing that you're doing your best and providing the standard of care is reassuring and can be reassuring, but in the end, it was a very hard and a very sad situation. We didn't feel like we were getting a lot of wins. Just a lot of people ended up not making it.
This can be a yes or no answer. Did you or any of the other doctors, either in New York or now back here in California, take hydroxychloroquine as a preventative yourselves?
No, I don't know anybody, any physician or provider that's taking hydroxychloroquine as a preventative measure.
I do want to touch on the fact that families were not able to see or be with patients in the unit where you were and in most hospitals, in fact. And you recorded yourself 5 days into your time there and talked about that as a critical factor. And on a number of levels, it makes a difference in our understanding of the disease. Would you just say more about that?
Absolutely. I think one of the biggest problems right now is due to the fact that patients' family members are not able to visit them on the coronavirus units, is that they're not actually seeing what's happening and how badly this virus is affecting their family members. So, you know, we call and we update the family members on a day-to-day basis, but they're not seeing how truly sick they are. And, you know, one of the saddest things about this whole situation is that, even when these patients die, their family members can't be with them. And so when these patients end up passing, their family members have to say goodbye to them over FaceTime, which is a very uncomfortable and sort of distressing and odd way to do that. And it's for everybody. It's very distressing to the family. You know, the patients are intubated and sedated. So, you know, we try and keep them as comfortable as possible. So I don't think they're aware of it. But one of the saddest things that I think about is the fact that family members may drop their, you know, their ill
parent
or loved one at the hospital and not recognize the fact that that may be the last time that they see them. And in the case where I was, that oftentimes was the case. I think that if people were, if there was more transparency into what was going on in these ICUs around the nation, and people had a better understanding as to how violent this virus is on the human body or can be in critically ill patients, I think people would have a better understanding of the need to be more concerned about the virus in general.
And so, again, this can be a yes or no question, but I will tell you that it was very difficult at the beginning of this to get healthcare professionals to talk about some of the reality that you're describing. I do understand that because of privacy and protection of and patients' rights and all of what's required under the law. But hearing more stories, I think, can be more helpful in the reality of the disease. So is this changing? Do you feel as a doctor that obviously we're having this conversation, but you're more able to say more now about what's going on in that acute care setting?
I think the original difficulty was about people speaking out about the lack of PPE. But at the same time, there has not been as much discussion about what it truly looks like for critically ill patients. And I think that as we move towards opening up the economy, which is truly important, and I do understand that, you know, physicians and nurses and other healthcare providers are going to begin to speak up more so that we can proceed in a safe manner that will reduce the number of lives lost in our country.
But here we are, though, Dr. Sawyer, at this crossroad of managing public health and reopening daily life with more than a dozen states still in an upward trend of cases. How do you see it? And that's mixed with this message from a lot of people that the pandemic has been overblown. So be as direct as you can with me about your own personal view.
I think it's very scary. I think that it comes from a lack of awareness of how truly devastating this virus can be. And I think that there is, I don't understand it because we're now with a nearly 92,000 loss of lives. And this is not overblown. You know, I've seen this for myself, and I can just say definitively that this is not something that you want. This is not something that you want your family member to get. You don't want to go through this. And there is the potential that with effective, robust, you know, treatment infrastructure, contact tracing, wearing a mask, washing your hands, social distancing, that we can reduce the number of deaths in our country. Because ultimately, I, as a physician, do not want people to have to go through what I saw people going through in New York. It is truly sad and truly devastating. And we can do more to prevent this from happening.
Well, I think I'll leave all of us with those words, and I thank you so much for taking some of your important time to talk with us today. Dr. Sawyer, take care.
Okay, thank you so much.
And thanks for your service to all of us. Dr. Nick Sawyer is Assistant Clinical Professor in the UC Davis Department of Emergency Medicine. He works in the UC Davis Health Emergency Room at the Med Center, and he's talking about the time of 2 weeks he spent volunteering at the ICU in New York's Elmhurst Hospital. So we're going to move the conversation forward to the West Sacramento mayor, Chris Cabaldon, because he has his own warning about the pace of reopening, specifically that his county has had inadequate and inaccessible testing sites. In a letter to the chair of the Yolo County Board of Supervisors, Mayor Cabaldon wrote, "Without testing, we are managing the emergency and its significant risk blindfolded." The mayor's joining us by phone. Mayor Cabaldon, thanks for your time today.
Thanks for having me, Beth.
Are there COVID-19 testing sites right now in your city, in West Sacramento?
There are not. There's a highly fragmented system, is not even the right word. There, all kinds of folks are doing testing, different kinds of tests. But the main testing centers are Yolo, either Woodland Hospital, the Davis Hospital, and a state-funded and supported county testing center. And none of those are in West Sacramento. And the paradox is that most of the cases, COVID cases in the county, most of the hospitalizations are in our city, and we're directly adjacent to the urban core of Sacramento, obviously. We can't manage the reopening, which we all want to move as quickly as we can towards reopening. And reopening can work with a very, very robust system of monitoring testing, not just the kind of testing that you or I might get. Saying, "Hey, Beth, I'm curious. Let's go get tested and see whether we have the virus or not today." That's one kind of testing. But the key testing in order to make reopening as safe as shelter was the sort of randomized, regular monitoring testing that's repeated over time. And we're nowhere near that on a regional basis, but we certainly aren't. We don't have the testing here in West Sacramento yet.
So I see on the Yolo County website that a test site location is expected to open in West Sacramento on June 2nd. However, there is already a readiness plan submitted by the county, and one of the criteria, as you know, is adequate testing and tracing. So somewhere here, there is a disconnect. How involved are you in the process of being able to voice and weigh in on the procedure to say, let's move ahead in these phases?
Well, after my letter to the board did meet yesterday, and several board members, Supervisor Saylor from Davis, and of course our own Supervisor Villegas from here in West Sacramento made very strong statements, and the board has directed its staff to work closely with the cities in order to improve that connection. You know, we've gotten the value of all the metrics and dashboards and roadmaps and what have you were that they would allow us to make hard decisions during this point of the crisis, where we didn't want to make the hard decisions, where, you know, every fiber of politics was saying, open this, open that. And so one tremendous need for those metrics and tools was to say, hey, we're going to follow a system here, and we're going to look at the numbers. We're not going to let our emotions and our polling data and our protests drive public health choices. And that has mostly worked, but it's also created a situation where we sometimes don't see past the official numbers of what's really going on. And so the state requirements are only looking at the county level. And so if we had thousands of tests all occurring up at Cache Creek Casino and zero tests in Davis Woodland and West Sacramento, where all the cases are, we would still pass that state test. But we would not be passing a public health test, and that's the situation that we've been in here. And I think we're now back on track in terms of collaborating. But the issue is, we can't have testing start on June 2nd while having the widespread reopening happening before that. And so we're trying to make those match up.
Governor Newsom has talked about shifting to dealing with hotspots, so a smaller level, if you will, than the county, that's probably looking forward in terms of containment. Meanwhile, I think you were listening to Dr. Nick Sawyer, and I hear what you're saying, that between data points, there is an ongoing story about this disease. Can I ask you what concerns personally you have for yourself, for the people of West Sacramento, that are outside of those data points?
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of about FaceTime, really. My best friend his mom lost her brother a week or so ago, and both the experience that, that Dr. Sawyer described is what happened, and then the funeral as well. Andrea watched on the cell phone screen, and there's so many folks who are in our in my city that are grappling with that necessarily directly yet, but they are afraid and they're worried, and they've also and others who have sacrificed so much in the last 2 months because of the shelter orders and the economic impacts, and it they want to make sure that that all of that sacrifice protects them in the future. So I am really worried because so many of us don't want to pay the we read the science that we want to read, we get the results that we want to get, and we feel like it's inevitable, and it's not inevitable. The virus didn't go anywhere. We didn't beat the virus. we beat the surge in terms of the hospitalizations that we were trying to deal with, but the virus didn't disappear. It's out there. And my biggest worry is as we open up quickly, especially in the initial weeks, where the folks that are going to be out are also going to be many of the same folks that were violating the orders previously and having, you know, congregating in you know, at the picnic table at the park, or having house parties and birthday parties or in churches or whatever, that those will be the first folks out. They had the lowest risk aversion in the first place, and they will on the, you know, if it's in a restaurant or a bar on Memorial Day weekend or the following weekend. And so some of the most dangerous vectors for the virus will be circulating the most in the early stages, and we've all grappled. The state, county, and city governments are trying to deal with that, but also so many citizens who want to support their local restaurants, they want to be active, they want to be social again, but they also want to be safe. And what Dr. Sawyer was describing is horrific, and it's hard for us to look at. Right, it's just as regular people. It's hard to see what he's describing, and look beyond the Facebook posts and the tweets, and understand that when it hits us and our own families or our own friends or our own coworkers, that it is a horrific and a disease that we still know very little about.
Hmm. Mayor Cabaldon, thank you so much for your time. I'm sorry for your losses, as for everybody experiencing this, and I thank you for your perspective today.
Thank you very much.
Take care. That's West Sacramento Mayor Chris Cabaldon. We were not able to get a Yolo County representative to join us today, but the board chair has said publicly that he understands the concerns expressed by the mayor. You heard the mayor say that in a meeting yesterday, there was a renewed effort to collaborate, and the board says it is confident about the steps in testing that have been taken. Up next, Dr. Peter Bielenson is going to join us. Sacramento County is poised to move deeper into phase two. We'll have that conversation with him. You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio.